Welcome back to the program. Still to come, Tom Fitzgerald, general manager of the New Jersey Devils. Sam Carcitti talks about the Flyers. Helena St. James on the Red Wings. A couple of things to mention quickly before we get to Arda Okal from ESPN. Congratulations to Brian Williams. Have a hard time saying that name without a smile. Man, how many Olympics have you seen presented by Brian Williams? Retires, made official today after a very successful 50-year career. Congratulations to Brian Williams. And also, mentioning a couple of seconds ago with Elliot, wondering if Pierre Dorion made the trip to Carolina with the Ottawa Senators, and just got a note he did. This is a team in crisis, so no surprise. The GM is with the squad as the Ottawa Senators take on the Carolina Hurricanes later on this evening. That is a tough turnaround for the Sens. Meanwhile, Arda Okal, how are you, my good friend, and longtime friend, I should add. How you doing, Arda?
I'm doing great. It's good to finally be talking to you on air. Real quick before we get started, I know that you like to commandeer podcasts whenever you're a guest. Let me just take a quick second to say thank you. Back in 2009, Jeff, took a blind message from me. I forget what social media, I think it was Facebook or something, but I was like at a crossroads in my Canadian media career, and you helped me out without having ever met me. So I just want your listeners to know that's the kind of guy they're listening to every day.
First of all, you should never listen to advice from me, so shame on you. But if I helped you in any way with your career, then I'm happy, because you are a force. You're one of the brightest voices in broadcasting on a number of different levels as well too. Like, I'm sort of, you know, narrow cast and pigeonholed in hockey, which is cool with me. Like, that's always been my first love, but you know, you go a lot wider than that too, and you're really sort of plugged into a lot of different areas of entertainment as well. And listen, man, just, you know, watching from the outside, and I'm not the only one that's noticed this, like, there's a lot of people that are proud of you. Because I think, you know, I think a lot of people, listen, in broadcasting, and I got this advice, when I first started, it would have been like 95 or 96. When you first start broadcasting, you don't know which direction it's going to go, because this industry promises you exactly nothing. And I remember having a conversation with a gentleman by the name of Jim Rose. Now, Jim Rose, guy from Seattle, used to run this like grunge circus, you know, the Jim Rose circus, toured Lollapalooza with like Nine Inch Nails
guys, Soundgarden. Yeah.
Remember Jim? And he was appeared on the X-Files a bunch of times. Anyway, so Jim Rose and I did an interview with him. We ended up going out for lunch, and he said something to me, Arda, that really stuck with me. And I remember having these conversations with you back in 2009 and thinking about Jim Rose, although I never told you this because I didn't want to scare you. He said, you're going to come to a part in your career where you're going to have to make a decision. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, you know, it happens in every profession, and it really happens a lot in yours. You're going to have to make a decision between whether you need to either quit or work harder. And there's no obvious answer. And there's like there ultimately will be a right answer. Like, some people should quit. Some people should work harder. But it's none of it's obvious to you. You just have to take a risk. You just have to gamble on yourself if you're going to go for it. And I never forgot that. It's just over, I think it was like at a restaurant up at Yonge and Eglinton around the old fan studios years ago. I've never forgotten that. You're going to hit a crossroads where your decision is, should I quit or should I work harder? And I think, Arda, for everybody's benefit and certainly yours, man, you worked hard. And you took the I'm going to work harder route. And not everybody does that.
I think that was
because
the advice
it's
gave
hard.
Me too.
Was it? Work hard.
Yeah, like, I think that was route. The quote you actually gave me all those years. Like that, wow. Yeah, I'm pretty
Jim Rose.
Certain that was.
Yeah, Jim Rose. Wow. Anyway,
I need that advice now, because now I have to work with Greg Wyshynski, so I either have to quit or work harder.
Oh boy, how many years did I do with him? How many arguments have I had with Wish on the old MVSW podcast? I miss that guy. He's fun, man. He's a fun dude to work with. Well, let me if you're mentioning Wyshynski, then let's jump in with a team like the New Jersey Devils, because that's his favorite squad. Yeah. He grew up a Devils fan, and I'm gonna have Tom Fitzgerald on a little bit later on. You know, Jack Hughes contract, 8x8, is it too much? That's one situation. The one thing about New Jersey is we knew they'd be better, and again, it's only a quarter of the way in. I didn't know that they would be this good this fast. And I know development's not linear, and they could still take a step back and probably will. But Arda, where are you at on the New Jersey Devils right now?
I was bullish on them at the start of the year. I thought they had some really good pieces. And obviously this was before Jack Hughes got injured. And actually they exceeded my expectations after Jack Hughes got injured in the games that I watched them play. The thing that sticks with me the most, I used to work for that team and also MSG Networks on Devils broadcast. I remember the leanest of lean years, where even in the year where Taylor Hall willed them to the playoffs, I think it was 2017, you didn't have this sense of this team can mount a comeback in the third period. There was always this sense of, oh boy, they're down by one. Even with 20 minutes to go, this game is a wash. Like, they didn't have that fight, that grit to them in those years. They definitely have that here, and I especially see it on that second line. I know that people consistently focus on those names, the Andreas Johnson, the Dawson Mercers, Jesper Bratt with them there. There's a lot of scrappy players up and down that lineup that is a definite cause for optimism. And so my bullish stance remains. I think they're going to be fighting for a playoff spot come the business end of the schedule.
What about the Rangers? And again, that's another team that we looked at and said, this team's going to be better. We just don't know how better they're going to be. Opening night didn't look great at all, but they got up, dusted themselves off, and have been a really good team ever since. Listen, a lot of it is netminding. Igor Shesterkin is fantastic, but Kreider's got 15 goals. Panarin's one of the best free agent signings in the history of the game, with all due respect to Zdeno Chara, who's probably the first best free agent signing in the history of the game. Arda, where are you at on the Rangers?
So I'm with you. I think Shesterkin is a Vezina trophy leader. I agree with you. I heard you say that earlier. Also, cheap plug for your podcast that you did. The name escapes me, but the gentleman that's the goaltending whisperer, that podcast that you did where you guys talked about Shesterkin there and like the goaltender hubs, that was a great podcast. And I loved everything he had to say about Shesterkin in that one.
Kevin Woodley from In Goal Magazine, writes for NHL.com as well. He's the best.
Awesome. So yeah, no, I'm very bullish. The three names that I had my eye on, and I think everyone did honestly when they were doing the Rangers previews, was what kind of season are we going to get from Igor Shesterkin in net, Alexi Lafreniere, and Kaapo Kakko? I feel like those were the three names that people were really focusing on. And meanwhile, a guy like Chris Kreider is saying, hey, I got 16 goals in 21 games right now. My career high was 28, so I'm cruising along. And meanwhile, a guy like Nika Zibanejad signs a big contract in the offseason. He just got his 300th point as a Ranger. Like, this is a team that knows how to hold the lead. They're not defeated in regulation when they score first. So, like, they're a team that they get the lead, they know how to keep the lead, they know how to play hard. Like, I like what I'm seeing from the Rangers as well. And honestly, I know that the numbers may not necessarily support it. Kakko had a good game in their last game against the Flyers, who are struggling, obviously. But, the other than the Islanders, the New Jersey area teams right now, or the New York area teams, I should say, there's a lot of optimism there.
You know, I remember this would have been about 2 years ago at the Players Tour in Chicago. Elliot and I were interviewing Henrik Lundqvist. And even though Wayne Gretzky always told me never drop names, there's Lundqvist saying, listen, don't sleep on this Kaapo Kakko kid. He's really good. Like, this is after they drafted him second overall in the Vancouver draft. And, you know, it's been a tough adjustment. Like the thing we know is the NHL is a really hard league to play in for young hockey players. You getting the sense now, and again, last seven games, he's got 8 points, you know, a pair of assists last night against the Flyers. Does it seem to you now like Kakko is finally starting to adjust to the NHL, Arda?
First of all, I'll say Isn't it awful that Henrik Lundqvist is on the broadcast side of things, Jeff? Because now you and I have to up our suit games.
Not just suit game, but like everything. Like I'm embarrassed to go on television. Whether it's like the Louis Vuittons under my eyes, whether it's the bad feathers, like the things that I can't control. Like Deb Berman handles all of our fashion, so that's covered. I'm good for that. But everything else, he's better looking. He's more talented. He delivers well. He's got the, you know, the blue eyes of Deep Summer. Like, good luck competing against that, Arda.
No chance. No chance, my friend. I will say, so going back to Taco, he did make some defensive strides last year. I think that was one thing that was very noticeable there. And I feel like he's building that chemistry. I think that he is feeling more comfortable on the puck. That was one thing I noticed about Jack Hughes, too, this season was, like, whenever him and Kako particularly, when they touch the puck, it feels like they're more comfortable. It feels like more than ever they feel like they belong and they know what they're doing with the puck, as opposed to feeling like I'm young in this league and I don't want to make a mistake because I still have that pressure of being in the show. So yeah. I feel like Kako's getting there, and I feel like that confidence is growing, which is a good thing.
It's not like it's a grenade on your blade, right? Like, young kids always feel like, oh, get this thing off my blade. Oh, I don't want the responsibility. Oh, this thing's going to blow up on my stick. Oh, I'm going to turn it over. Oh, the play's going to die with me with the puck on my blade. I'm going to go back to the bench. You know, the play just died with me. Like, it's understandable. It's tough. It's a tough league. But you're right. Like, you can tell just with how kids handle the puck how confident they are. And you can tell where a kid's, like, overwhelmed. And that's where I'll go back to Dawson Mercer. I mean, for me, he's found money with the New Jersey Devils because he's got the puck on his stick and he holds it like he belongs there, because he does. Like, he's pushed the program forward a ton. Like, I don't know that I can talk enough about how much Dawson Mercer has meant to this Devil squad.
Oh, absolutely. That line is terrific. Another guy actually that comes to mind is Mason McTavish. Even early on in the season with the Ducks, I just noticed a level of confidence that I was surprised by, and I'm sure that that's carrying on in Peterborough.
Yeah, he's first day back in Peterborough, right? Rips a hat trick. Like, Hockey yeah. Canada's just doing cartwheels.
Welcome back, right?
Anaheim sent him back. A couple of more things on the New York area teams. Mentioned the Rangers, mentioned the Devils. What's up with the Islanders? Like, I know that there's COVID situation. There are injuries. There's the 13-game road trip, which really wasn't a road trip. They played 13 away games. There's still plenty of time at home. But still, nonetheless, they opened up with 13 games away from the new arena. Have you figured out what's happening with the Islanders? Because I haven't.
No. And honestly, well, actually, if you ask an Islanders fan, and I have heard this numerous amounts of times, a lot of us at ESPN selected the Islanders to at least make the Stanley Cup final before the season started. And according to Islanders fans, we essentially cursed their entire season. So we are to blame for the Islanders' woes. And I am constantly reminded of this, whether it's in person or on Twitter, which I very much appreciate the passion of Islanders fans. I will also mention that they don't like to hear that John Tavares has more victories at UBS Arena than the Islanders do. That is not so something bad to say to an Islanders fan, Jack.
No.
Definitely, that's, if I may.
And getting roasted on Raw, too, that can't help.
Like, No kidding. I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean, you have one of the best coaches in the league. You have one of the best general managers of all time. You have a lot of great pieces there, but maybe that... I had heard from a lot of players in and out of that organization, like even just asking some of my colleagues, like, what does a road trip like that do? And yeah, you get to stay home, and a lot of those are driving distance games. So it's not like you're on the road for that entire time, but not having that home vibe, it definitely was affecting some of the players, in the sense that by the end of it, you could tell they just wanted to get this whole thing over with, and they just wanted to go to their new home. Like, those last couple of games, it just looked like they were checked out. So I saw a quote online with them saying, you know, their playoffs essentially start now. And that's pretty appropriate, especially if you believe the American Thanksgiving cutoff.
It's your Canadian coming out there, Arda.
Yeah, exactly.
I got about 60 seconds for this one. Let's get your media chops in. 60 seconds. What is the biggest story in hockey right now for you?
Oh, the Olympics, for sure. I'm every single day my confidence wanes that the NHL players will actually participate in the Olympics. Every day there's a different story about players getting into COVID protocol. We saw it with the Red Wings, now the Canadians. We've seen schedule disruptions with the Senators and the Islanders. That didn't help with the Islanders either, obviously. But every day, especially with the Omicron variant and whatever that might be happening there in Beijing or even stateside with further interruptions, my confidence, I'm not saying it's a definite, obviously, and the league has until January 10th to make a decision, Jeff, but I am bracing myself for a world where the NHL players do not go.
Yeah, it's so funny. Anytime I try to have a conversation about the Olympics, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking always add the caveat, if they go, if they go, if they go. And I fought it for the longest time. And now it seems as if every conversation that I have has to be prefaced with, well, if they end up going to Beijing, do you think so-and-so makes a team? Or does this guy have a shot? Or Stamkos Tavares in the conversation now. I'm with you. And, you know, we saw Emily Kaplan, you know, tweeting on the weekend about players having misgivings about a three-week quarantine if there's a positive test in Beijing. There's a lot of obstacles here. And you're right, whether it's, you know, the two in Montreal today, Jordan Binnington and St. Louis, every day it's, you know, a COVID roll call at the beginning of every program. Listen, we got to get you back on when we have more time. This has been a lot of fun. Let's do it again soon and say hi to my good buddy Wish, okay?
I will. You're the best, Jeff. Thank you.
Thanks, Arda. You're the best too, buddy. Arda Okal from ESPN, covering hockey, amongst other sports. Yeah, that guy is so supremely talented. It makes me angry. No, it makes me happy. He's a talented guy and he's worked hard. And you always love to see good people rewarded. Coming up in the second hour, Tom Fitzgerald, GM of the New Jersey Devils, Helena St. James, talks to us about the Red Wings. But next, speaking of dark clouds over things, the Flyers. 7 straight losses. Sam Carcitti from the Philadelphia Inquirer. I'll try to make sense and try to figure out what's next for the team in orange. Keep it here.
After a break, they had not played since last Friday. We'll make it 4 wins in a row and 8 of their last 9, moving to 14-4-3. They win the first of 4 meetings with the Flyers this year. For the Flyers, no wins in their last 7 now. 0-5-2 over their last 7 games. They'll be off until Sunday. 4-1 your final. Shesterkin was good when he had to be. And the Rangers take care of the Flyers.
Oh boy, it's a tough time right now for the Philadelphia Flyers. As we're standing by for Sam Carcitti from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Still to come, Helena St. James of the Detroit Free Press. She'll stop by to fill us in on the Red Wings. And bottom of the hour, Tom Fitzgerald, GM of the New Jersey Devils. So a couple of things on the Philadelphia Flyers. So this is a team that, you know, like many teams in the Metropolitan Division, there were elevated expectations. We thought this season was going to be different. Chuck Fletcher identified, and we all thought correctly so, and I'm one of them, that the main problem with the Philadelphia Flyers from 1 year to the next was they could not defend. The Philadelphia Flyers had a hard time defending. They had a hard time keeping the puck out of their net as well. And he went into the offseason, replaced the quote-unquote backup netminder, enter Martin Jones, now former of the San Jose Sharks, and you crossed your fingers and you said, look, we expect slash hope Carter Hart will have a better season. Last year's COVID season was really tough on young players. Carter Hart was Exhibit A, as many people have indicated, and I believe that. So he's had a bounce back season. You know, one of the points that's not lost on a lot of people with the Philadelphia Flyers is this is a squad that has had their fair share of disappointments, letdowns, whether it's in the playoffs or perhaps more recently in the regular season. And a lot of it, we've pointed to the fact that this is a team that has always been consistently let down by their net minding. Now, for the longest time, little peek into my brain here. For the longest time, if you want to sort of cozy up on the hockey conspiracy grassy knoll with your buddy Jeffy here, for the longest time, you know what I believed? I believe that when Bob Clark ran the Philadelphia Flyers, my theory was that Bob Clark had a theory that you could win Stanley Cups without great goaltending, which went back to his era of Philadelphia Flyers, which was led by the aforementioned Bob Clark and Reggie Leach and Rick McLeish and Bill Barber, but mostly led by Bernie Parent, Mr. Conn Smythe Trophy. For me, the best, certainly in that era, I don't know about all time, I'll defer to the goalie experts on this one, the best angle goalie that I ever saw. You know, not the most athletically flamboyant, but as far as playing his angles the best in that era, I don't know that I saw a better one than Bernie Parent. My theory was always, as we dovetail down Conspiracy Road, that the whole time that Bobby Clark ran the Philadelphia Flyers, he was trying not just to win games and win cups, but was trying to prove that you could do it without having an elite level netminder. Or defense, for that matter. The other thing about the Philadelphia Flyers historically, and this has changed in the last few seasons, make no mistake about it, so we'll park that, has changed. But historically, it's a team that never drafted and or developed defensemen or goalies. They bought them. They drafted their forwards. If you go back and look at the history of the Philadelphia Flyers draft, and again, this has changed the last few seasons, but up until the last few seasons, it's a squad that never drafted and developed goaltenders or defensemen. They always bought them or traded for them, but they paid something for them. It wasn't like they drafted and developed them. I always thought this was Bobby Clark's way of saying, we're going to win the Stanley Cup, and I'm going to show you that the most important part of winning a Stanley Cup is not your goaltender, but it's your center, or it's one of your forwards. Again, that's my little brain. That was always my thought. And the thing about goaltenders with the Philadelphia Flyers right now, and here they are at yet another crossroads, good October, bad November. They're at a crossroads. They're having a challenging season. And what's the one thing we can't scapegoat? It's goaltending. Carter Hart has been excellent. 919 save percentage. Martin Jones in the 7 games that he's played with the Philadelphia Flyers. You know, Martin Jones, the guy that everybody wrote off with the San Jose Sharks. Ah, he's done. They're firing balloons through him. He's hard to hit. That guy. And 921 save percentage in 7 games. Nobody can scapegoat the goalies on this one. And Chuck Fletcher did go out and change his blue line. Now, the Ryan Ellis injury hurts bad. A lot of what Chuck Fletcher, I think, was trying to do revolved around Ryan Ellis. Now, they bring in Keith Yandel. They bring in Rasmus Ristolainen. Two high-profile moves. Nothing more high-profile, however, with all due respect to the Voracek-Atkinson trade, nothing was more significant than bringing in Ryan Ellis. So that injury cannot be overstated. That is huge for this team, but still underperforming. And I just wonder, and Elliot and I talked about this here on the show yesterday, I wonder at what point, because the Flyers don't play again now until Monday, coming off the 4-1 loss against the Rangers last night. That's a lot of time to make a move. Now, Chuck Fletcher said he's not interested in making a move, but next week they got 5 games. That's a tough, tough slog. They got the Tampa Bay Lightning. They got the Colorado Avalanche. They got the New Jersey Devils, the Vegas Golden Knights, and the Arizona Coyotes. It's over a span of 6 days. I wonder if it really continues to go south, what the nature of the conversation is. And does it turn to someone like Claude Giroux? And what do you do? because they've moved big names up front. Jacob Voracek, who, by the way, very quietly, one of the best, you know, playmakers in the NHL over the past 10 years. One of the, just an elite level passer. They swap him out for Cam Atkinson, who comes in, and Cam Atkinson's given them 7 goals so far. I wonder at what point you start to say, do we need to make a trade? Or do we need to make another move to shake things up here? Because I think a lot of us look at this and say, yes, the Ellis injury is one thing, but we can't scapegoat the goaltending. This is a much better team on paper than we're seeing on the ice. I don't know when we're going to be at that point. Flyers fans are at that point. But you're Chuck Fletcher. You say to yourself, well, hang on a second here. Like, I get it from his point of view. You know, fans are always, you know, what was last game like? You know, what have you done for me? What have you done for me 5 minutes ago? That's how I'm going to evaluate you. That's how I feel about you. What you did 5 minutes ago, what you did last night, what you did last game, what's your streak? That's how I feel about you. But if you're Chuck Fletcher this season, have you not seen 2 different teams? Like, you've seen this team play well. Is that the real Philadelphia Flyers? You've seen this team look lifeless. That the real Philadelphia Flyers? It's a really competitive division, so you don't have a lot of time to make up your mind who you are and what you need. But it's a complicated spot for Chuck Fletcher to find himself in because he's already made big moves, and the biggest move of them all, that guy's hurt. So I don't know which way Chuck Fletcher is leaning on this one. But much like we talk about the Ottawa Senators, you feel like something's coming. We still feel like something's coming to Vancouver. And I have to think you have to feel like something's coming with the Philadelphia Flyers right now as well. This team is too good to be performing like this. Okay, one other thing here. Oh, we have Helena? Okay, hang on. Well, I want to pause and talk about John Davidson here at some point if I get a couple of moments. But right now I want to talk about the Detroit Red Wings. Are we allowed to say they're a fun team to watch now? Am I allowed to say that I really enjoy watching the Detroit Red Wings? And it's not just Lucas Raymond, although Lucas Raymond is a big part of it. Joining me to talk about the Red Wings is Helena St. James from the Detroit Free Press and, I should point out, author of The Big 50 Detroit Red Wings. Helena, thanks so much for joining me here today. For those that haven't seen / read it, it's a really nice book, some great stories. Talk to us briefly about The Big 50.
Yeah, you know what, it's basically the history of the franchise. And you know, the publishing agreement was for somewhere in the 70,000 word range, and it came in closer to 100,000 because there's just so much to write about. So, yeah, and I'll just plug it real quick and say people can email me at hstjamesfreepress.com if they want a personalized copy for the holidays for anybody. So really, really pleased with it. It turned out great. A lot of great, you know, people set aside time to talk to me for it. So, so it's if you're a Red Wings fan, I can't recommend it highly enough.
When you do a book like this and you've got like marvelous stories, whether it's about, you know, there's stuff on Terry Sawchuk, obviously, you know, Gordie Howe, Steve Yzerman, Nick Lidstrom, Pavel Datsyuk, and a lot of like other, I love that you included Bruce Martin in all of this as well, longtime voice of the Detroit Red Wings. You can't help but go through something like this and not learn something that you didn't know previous. Doing this book, what did you learn about the Wings?
Well, it's interesting. You know, everybody in Detroit kind of knows, okay, they really wanted Pat LaFontaine in 1983, but the extent of how much they really wanted him. I mean, Mike Ilitch was willing to offer $1 million to the Islanders, you know, to get him. I mean, they were really downcast when they got Steve, you know, and he turned out to be the second greatest thing to happen to the franchise since Gordie Howe arrived, you know, 40 years earlier. So it's really learning the details of just how much, and it made sense. You know, I mean, Pat LaFontaine's from the area. I mean, And, you know, they had 2,500 season ticket holders when the Illiches bought the team in 1982. So in every respect, you know, Pat LaFontaine made sense. But, you know, as Jimmy DeVellano puts it, lucky us that he fell to the wings at fourth, because he's just, you know, transformed the franchise back then. And now, you know, to your point about are you allowed to say they're fun to watch? Absolutely. And he's a key reason because of the personnel he's brought in, you know, and some of those are draft choices. But, I mean, Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider, they're a huge reason why the Wings absolutely have been fun to watch again.
You know, I look at 1983 at that draft, and you know, Pat LaFontaine goes third overall to the Islanders, and he comes out of Verdun, and he's got 234 points and 104 goals, and Yzerman comes in at like a respectable 91 points, but he's not putting up like these gaudy numbers like LaFontaine. Like, I get it. But the thing about it is, if you know anything about Dick Todd, who's the head coach of the Peterborough Petes at that point, you know, Yzerman was not getting the same ice time that LaFontaine got. Like, Dick Todd rolled four lines and that was it. Like, he rolled four lines, period. And I always wondered to myself, like, if Steve Yzerman would have had the same amount of ice time in Peterborough as Pat LaFontaine had in Verdun, what would his numbers have looked like? Because, you know, he obviously made the most of the minutes that he had in Peterborough. Now, I'm not saying he's going to get 234 like Pat LaFontaine did, but, you know, 150, 160 points for someone like Yzerman. Now, you've covered Steve Yzerman for a long time. How is he as an executive right now? Like, he's very, we know he's very intense. He's very serious. There's not a whole lot of joking around. When he makes his mind up and he's deliberate about something, there's no changing it. But how do you find him as a general manager?
He's very, very thorough, you know, and he has an inner circle that he trusts. And to be in that inner circle, you better not leak anything. You know, it was funny, the expansion draft this summer. I think every single selection was on the web long before the actual announcements, except Detroit's. You know, I mean, that's the he could put North Korea to shame with his ability to keep things secret. But he's very funny too. You know, like, I was chatting with him last night actually, because so he was named Rookie of the Month for December 1983, 1 month after, you know, Lucas got it just now for November. Mm-hmm. And I asked him if you remember, because he received something for getting that award back then, and he received a video cassette recorder, you know, and he said he couldn't remember that he got it, but it would have been, you know, and back in 1983, and I said, yeah, you know, but most people today are quickly going to, you know, ask Siri, what's a video cassette recorder?
No,
nobody knows, you know, but that was his reward for you know, coming in the fall of 1983 and having such a good season. But, you know, I mean, you look at the moves he's made. I mean, he heisted Nedeljkovic from Carolina for a third-round pick. The guy has been phenomenal. And Steve's moves, I mean, they've all been, you know, no really marquee moves. And, you know, he signs guys to two-year deals or such. None of them have mortgaged his future flexibility. I mean, he's really done an incredible job of bringing in Nick Leddy, Mark Stahl. I mean, not marquee names, but they've made a subtle difference. Sam Kania, just keeping him around. You know, they're good calming influences on the life on the ice and help set a good tone in the locker room. Like, you know, while keeping, you know, the core of this team that's supposed to rebuild the franchise, all in their, you know, around 20 to 25 years old. I mean, he's really, you know, locked into that and made a lot of smart moves to keep that going.
You see, that's an interesting point, because I look at the Wings and I look at Yzerman's moves, and whenever he makes them, and I'm glad you mentioned Leddy, and I'll throw Vladislav Namestnikov into the conversation as well. I look at the moves and I say, one, these players are there to help the younger kids on the Detroit Red Wings, and two, they're also there to be used as trade pieces come deadline to get more picks, to get more prospects, you know, to get more lottery tickets for the next generation of Detroit Red Wings. Do you feel the same way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, but he weighs that against, okay, what I mean, he's not going to trade you know, Mark Stahl or Sam Gagne for a sixth round pick or something, because their value to the team is greater than, you know, a late round pick like that. But, you know, he signs these veterans, you know, like, I mean, Nick Leddy probably going to appeal to a contender at the trade deadline. And that's, you know, I mean, Ken Holland had started doing that in the later years before he left, and Steve has continued that. You know, trade assets where you feel, you know, you can get more for them at the trade deadline. I mean, you know, even what we're coming up on 2 years now, the Anthony Mantha trade, I mean, he turned around and used one of the draft picks he got in that to move up and draft Kasa, the goaltender, mm-hmm. in his last year's draft. So, you know, he's giving himself a lot of maneuverability. While also, you know, recognizing, as he puts it, he has to put a product on the ice. You know, he has to, you know, I mean, he played through some miserable seasons. He knows how unfun that is for young players, and it's how hard it is on them. And, you know, also from the business angle, I mean, the Wings have drawn really well. Like they I think they're 8-2-2 now at home. Like they have a good home fan base, and, you know, they recognize they do owe those people something fun to watch.
Did you think, because I put this out there, I think, before the draft on Twitter, I wouldn't have been surprised if they used every single pick last year in the draft on a goaltender. And you mentioned Sebastian Kosta, who they picked up, Edmonton Oil Kings, you know, he's going to be the goaltender of the future for the Detroit Red Wings. But it is interesting the way that, you know, it's very deliberate at how Steve Yzerman is addressing positional need. I think going away, we all knew that they were taking a goaltender in the first round last season. It was only going to be a matter of who it was. And honestly, Helena, I wouldn't have been surprised if they used every single pick on a goalie, which of course would have been unprecedented. But I mean, he's deliberate with how he uses the draft to recreate this team.
He absolutely is. And you saw his first focus was on defense. I mean, Moritz Seider was his first pick. That was, I mean, their defense had just become such a patchwork, you know. I mean, and Trevor Daley, Mike Green, Jonathan Erickson, that, you know, they could barely play anymore. They had so many injuries. I think that horrible 2019-20 season, they went through 15 or 16 defensemen. They just couldn't patch it enough. So Steve went out and got Moritz Seider, and, you know, he spent a year in the AHL, and then the pandemic hit and they put him in Sweden, and it was a great move. I mean, he had to stay there then, but he was the defenseman of the year there. I mean, and you've come in, I mean, there, you know, he's looked like he belonged. He's already the team's best defenseman. So yeah, Steve focused on, you know, shoring up the defense first and adding, that was last October, you know, adding Mark Stahl, a good veteran, you know, this year, bringing in Nick Leddy, like just, he wants guys, he wants like Moritz Seider and Philip Ronick, the younger guys on the team, to have veterans to play with and kind of stabilize their, you know, their development. You know, and now, yeah, they need goaltending. To be fair, I mean, Jonathan Bernier really had played, he was their best player, you know, the previous 2-3 seasons. So, you know, but they swapped him out for Nedeljkovic, who's 6 or 7 years younger and, you know, is going to carry the team now until Kasa is ready. You know, those are the areas you want to address first. Now, I do think, you know, had the Wings ever miraculously moved up in the draft lottery, there were some pretty good centers available this year, and I think Steve would probably have grabbed one of those. He took Ben in Edmonton, the best available player, when he picked at 6. But I think, you know, at some point they do need to draft, because you can't get top line centers, you know, number one centers. You're not going to, nobody trades them. You know, they don't hit free agency. I mean, mm-hmm. the only way to get them is through the draft.
And he stuck with Jeff Blashill through all of this as well. And, you know, very, you know, perhaps not in the market, but outside of it, you know, it's a very quiet move, but he's stuck with someone who's, listen, shepherded a lot of, to be blunt, bad Detroit Red Wings teams. And it seems as if Yzerman doesn't want to marry Blashill's reputation to those teams whatsoever. Do you have a thought on his loyalty towards Blashill?
Yeah, I mean, he said, you know, after the 1920 season that he didn't think it was fair to put it on Jeff, and it absolutely was not. I mean, they, you know, Jimmy Howard unfortunately just struggled so much in what ended up being his last season, and They had so many injuries. It was just a bad situation. And to put it entirely on Jeff wasn't fair. And, I get emails probably, not so much anymore, but used to every single day, why is Jeff Blashill still a coach? And I tell people, look, just know this. Steve would not keep him around if he didn't think he was doing a good job developing the young guys. That's wins and losses matter to some extent. But right now it's, are you seeing growth in Dylan Larkin? Are you seeing growth in the 20 to 25-year-old group? Is Jeff playing those guys in key roles? That's what Steve is sitting up in his suite at Little Caesars Arena watching for. I know they have a good working relationship. So it's been a partnership that has worked, that he likes. And I think he also recognizes from being a player himself, 85, 86, the Wings went through two coaches, that there's something to be said for having stability, and just immediately the coach, we all know the coach is the easiest guy to swap out, but it may not necessarily give you the results you want. And you have to look beyond that at what's going on with the product on the ice.
So you mentioned Dylan Larkin there a couple of seconds ago, and he's having a real nice season. He has one more year after this one on term at $6.1 million. They can extend him this offseason. Do you have a thought on what the future is for Dylan Larkin? It's still a rebuilding team. The indication that we got last season was, it might take even longer than the Detroit Red Wings had originally planned. Do you have a thought on where Dylan Larkin's head is through this entire rebuild?
Yeah, he needed to come out and have a really strong start to this season, because he did not have a good season last year, and it was his first as captain, and, he talked about how difficult it was. All the guys on the team came to him with questions about what are we allowed to do on the road, and, it was a tough season for anybody to, start in that position. So, but he's been great, and he and Lucas just have such phenomenal chemistry on the ice together. So, it's, I go back to, Steve delayed naming a captain when he took over in April of 2019. But he did say, the guy I name, I want to be captain for a long time. Of course, he can change his mind to that. But I do think, and Dylan Larkin is from here. He's a really good character guy. He works really, really hard. The guys always refer to him as, the engine that drives the team. So I would think, he's somebody, they want around, that Steve wants around, that he recognizes, how important he is to the team.
It's a fun team to watch. I mentioned that off the top, whether it's Lucas Raymond, Mo Sider. I do want to ask you about, as we conclude, Tyler Bertuzzi here, placed on the COVID-19 protocol list. The NHL's only unvaccinated player. There's that issue, but the on-ice issue is this guy's having a career season. What's different, Helena, about Tyler Bertuzzi this year?
Well, he's been healthy. He, played 9 games last season and then was sidelined the rest of the season with a back injury and ended up having surgery. He had a really good start in when he played in January. It was just, we saw so little of him, so it made most sense, sign a short-term deal and kind of, for him establish his value for the Wings to see, okay, who is this guy really? But he's been consistent for them, and he's that mixture of grit. He aggravates opponents. He gets in their faces. He gets around the net. I'll say this. I've not seen any sentimentality from Steve about anybody. If he thinks he can make the team better, he will. But I do think, Tyler brings a unique, presence to the team in how he plays. And he has been a very consistent player for them. And he's somebody they got him as a bonus. They swapped picks in the 2013 draft with San Jose, moving back 2 spots from 18 to 20 to get Anthony Mantha. And they got a second round pick out of it, which they used in Tyler Bertuzzi. So, he turned out to be ultimately the longer term better player for the team. But I think, the vaccination stuff, it's, they've already been without him 3 games in Canada, and they are not paying him when they're in Canada and he has to miss those games. But, you know, it's going to be interesting to see. They're in Western Canada in mid-March. I mean, if they're anywhere near battling for a playoff position and lose one of their top line players for a week because if he still cannot travel, you know, but I think it's a tough situation. I mean, he's a popular teammate, but, you know, in the organization, I mean, I've had people email and say, well, why don't they just suspend him? Well, you know, is that ultimately what's best for the team to not have him at all? They already lost Jakub Vrána in training camp. He and Anthony Mantha, you know, are rehabbing shoulder injuries both. Yeah. So he's an important part of their team and important part of their future. And, you know, it's just unfortunate that, that where he is regarding the vaccination situation.
Sure is having a heck of a season, though, to your point. He is at 18 points after 20 games, and that includes 9 goals. Listen, thanks so much for spending time with me today, Helena. Always great catching up with you. Best of luck with the book, and enjoy what is all of a sudden now, once again, a fun Detroit Red Wings team to watch and I'm sure to cover as well. Thanks so much for doing this today.
Absolutely. Anytime.
There she is, Helena St. James. Man, she has covered the Detroit Red Wings through so many incarnations of that squad. She's seen them come. She's seen them go. And now this is a team that is, once again, very much on the rise. If you haven't watched the Wings yet, do yourself a favor and watch them and see if you can keep your eyes off of number 23. That is Lucas Raymond. And see if you can keep your eyes off number 53. Right shot defenseman, the big German, Moritz Seider. We'll step away when we come back. New Jersey Devils general manager Tom Fitzgerald comments on his squad and the big Jack Hughes deal. That's up for grabs next as the Merrick Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Pushed ahead. Hughes has Graves with him. Here's Jack Hughes. Pulls up. Hughes. Backhand. He scores!
Up into the crowd for a lucky fan. He was so excited. What poise, patience by Jack Hughes as he gets the victory for the Devils on opening night in overtime.
Great call, great moment. Great player, great call. Really good team. New Jersey Devils, 22 points after 20 games, find themselves very much in the thick of things in the very competitive and challenging Metropolitan Division. Their general manager is Tom Fitzgerald, and he joins me now. Tom, good afternoon. Thanks for doing this. How are you today?
Jeff, I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well. I think we should begin with the well, you know what? Let's park Jack Hughes for a second. I just want to talk about your team quickly. How do you... as a manager, look at seasons? Do you go 5-game blocks? Do you go 10-game blocks? Do you go 25, 20, quarter mark, halfway? Like, when you're evaluating your squad, how much runway do you give yourself here?
I think, great question. I think right now the quarter, you know, mark of the season is a good indicator as well. Internally, you know, we'll set our goals, our objectives, and, you know, we'll do that in smaller increments, 5 games, you know, from a coaching staff perspective and what we're trying to accomplish in those 5 games. And then, you know, how does that add up over the course of a season? So, you know, internally in the locker room, players, coaches, they're 5 games, they just break it down game by game, but we'll want to get into, you know, where we at after each 5-game segment. But for me, you know, I think the quarter season, done now, 20 games, I think is a good indicator on where we're at, where we need to go, what we need to do, what we need to keep doing that we're doing well, and maybe start thinking about, you know, is there some adjustments we need to make? Maybe personnel, maybe players are playing below expectations. Maybe I've got American League players that are pushing, and that's, and I do. Is it time for one of them to get a chance to come up and see what they can do? So, yeah, we're in a good spot right now. We like where we're at. We're not satisfied at all by any means. So, yeah, it's all good.
I know you. I mean, this every manager will say we want more. We can still do better. Places to improve. We looked at your team at the beginning of the season. We said they're going to be better. We just don't know how much better they're going to be. And I know that you know, development is not linear, and there's going to be steps backwards, and there's going to be losing streaks along the way. There's going to be great moments along the way as well. But, you know, 20 games in, how do you evaluate your New Jersey Devils?
Well, we're young.
Yeah,
we're young. I think we're a fast team. I think the additions that we made on the back end, in particular, have helped us really solidify, you know, defending and puck moving transition with Dougie Hamilton, primarily as the transitional player. He is Ryan Gray's a really shut down, really good complementary to Dougie. Siegenthaler has really played well. I mean, he's a true defender. He's hard to play against because of his ability to gap up, close on people, and make the simple plays, you know, with Damon Severson's ability. And PK Subban's been he's been good. I think he's slotted in the right spot. So I like where our defense at. We want to get Ty Smith going here. He's not playing up to his capabilities, but he's a great young player and needs some time up front. We're young. I said this, we said it years ago when we drafted Nico Reichero as the GM, like, we'd like to build up the middle. And then along came Jack and Dawson Mercer. I wasn't expecting what I see out of Dawson Mercer. So I like where our youth's at. We do have some players that I think are playing under their capabilities. And I also think we're in and I call it the learn the win phase. And it's not a cop out by any means, but all the great teams know they understand how to win. They understand how to close games off. And we're still in that, you know, time clock management, where are we at in the game, puck management, you know, doing all those small things that add up to a win. A commitment to me is the big thing. You know, being committed to that system, be committed to each other, committed to making the right play. So, I like where we're at, but we're nowhere near satisfied with where we're at. If that makes any sense, I think we could be better.
No, it certainly does. And, you know, one of the things that I always wonder about, too, like I'll sit here behind a microphone and blast off about what this team should do and that team should do. And I can't believe they're not. And listen, I'm talking all this from the back seat. Like, I don't have a hand on a wheel anywhere. But I always wonder whenever I talk to managers, Tom, like, how do you build into your equation the idea of taking a chance or being a little bit risky? Like, I know that, you know, you want to make sure you make the right decisions and consult with, you know, every aspect of your organization before, whether it's, you know, a Jack Hughes contract or, you know, committing long term to a defenseman or, you know, making a trade or sending a guy down or a waiver claim. How do you, in your mind, build in the idea of there needs to be a percentage here where we take a chance and make ourselves available to take a chance and not just overmanage everything? How much of your day or how much of your decision-making revolves around, you know what, a part of this has to be, we need to take a chance here to try to hit a home run?
Again, great question. I think, first and foremost, being honest with yourself is important. Looking in the mirror and knowing where you're at in the process of where your team's at, and then making those calculated decisions. And sure, there's always risk in any move you make. You know, there's always risk. You know, we're a strong analytic club, and we can simulate some players and how they fit in our team, and, you know, maybe what would they produce and what would the end result be, and where does that bring us playoff wise. You know, I can plug these numbers in and certain players in and come out. But at the end of the day, it's got to be the right fit. It's got to be the right person in the locker room. Understand where we're at in this voyage that we're on. And buy in, too. You know, there still has to be a percentage of, is this person the right fit for this group? Or could this person drag people down? Or could this person drag people up? But I think, like I said earlier, it's knowing where you're at in the voyage and really not kidding yourselves either. I'm not saying we're not there. I mean, we're not going to win the Stanley Cup this year. We've got to get to the playoffs first, understand what playoff hockey is all about, understand what 82 games crunches and go from there. But I like internally what we have. As far as homegrown, the additions that we've made through trade via free agency, I want to make my team better. I want to complement these young players, but it has to be the right time, the right person, and the right fit.
With Tom Fitzgerald, general manager of the New Jersey Devils, walk us through the entire process of bringing Nathan Bastian back to the New Jersey Devils organization. There were a lot of people, like specifically online, when he was available. I mean, I'm sure either you saw it or someone in your staff told you just how much hue and cry there was around New Jersey Devils fans about bringing him back.
Yeah, I mean, Nate's a great kid, first and foremost. Hated losing him, but like I told him when he was picked by Seattle, because I've done it twice as a player in Florida and in Nashville, it's going to be the greatest time of your life. It really is. Expansion is all about opportunity, and you're going to be able to grow your game. I'm not sure what happened out there with him and that team, but was made available. And where we were at, you know, we got some injuries. We felt, you know what, we can never have enough depth. He brought an element to our team, a heaviness that we actually probably lack. Great team guy. The players love him. The coaches love him. So it really was a no-brainer to bring the Nader back into town. And I got to tell you, you're right. I mean, our players, oh, my God. You would have thought we were bringing Mario Lemieux in.
That's high praise. Let me get to Jack Hughes here, because listen, last time you were on with me, we talked plenty about, you know, the personality, the performer, the player, all of it. I think a lot of people too are curious how you got to that number with Jack Hughes. Like, I know, like, the idea that, you know, you acquire a player, you draft him first overall, you draft his brother as well, like, you're all in on the Hughes boys, and we all understand that. And part of this is you identify your star players, and essentially you gamble on them. That's what everybody does. Like, you pick your guys and you bet on them. How do you get to the number you got to with Jack Hughes?
Well, I think anytime you're talking commitment, and that's long-term deals, there's a price to pay for that. What that number is different from player to player, as you know. And, you know, when you look around the league at the guys in that age bracket, I mean, he's only 20 years old, right? And yes, his on-ice production numbers aren't where anyone, or Jack in particular, wanted it to be, but it doesn't take away from what he is about to do. And you know, like I said earlier, we're a strong analytic team. You know, we can't ignore those underlying numbers of what this kid is about to do. Last year was a start. I think playing as an 18-year-old, we're not punishing him for the lack of production. This is all about where we think this play, where we believe this player is going to go production-wise. When that's going to be, I'm not sure. But you know what? When you have deals like this, you get commitments. You know, there's certain numbers that are attached to that, and we were fine. I meaning me and my organization, David Blitzer and Josh Harris, our owners, wanted to tie this kid up desperately long term, and you know, so there is a price to pay for that. But we feel this kid's going to outplay this contract, hopefully sooner rather than later, and he just wants to be a New Jersey Devil. He read all the quotes. He loves it here. It's hopefully a destination for future free agents that see what we're trying to do here, and it's a great place to live. And locking up him and Nico long term is a big win for us.
How much of the Jack Hughes decision is, I mean, hockey's one element of it, but when you have a personality like Jack Hughes, like last time you were on with me, we talked about, you know, the Amazon All or Nothing series, and you're mentioning, yeah, that would be great for us. And all we can think of is like, hey, just do one on Jack Hughes. Like, have a camera, follow Jack Hughes around for a season. There's a TV show. But I wonder, like, how much goes into, like, not just Jack Hughes the player, but Jack Hughes, you know, one of the faces, if not the face of the franchise. Does that go into the decision? Like, how much of it is a marketing decision as well?
I think marketing, it doesn't come into play for me personally, because it's already there. He is, you know, one of the faces of our team and our organization. By no means it's like, oh, we need to keep him because we can continue to market him. His play will do that. His play will help us market. That's, you know, and his play will help us win games. Winning games helps market your team, right? Like, it's just, winning games sells tickets. Like, it's pretty simple. He's a very confident young man, and that's what I love about him. He's highly competitive. He expects nothing but greatness from himself, and I don't know if that's achievable. I really don't. But I love the fact that he expects a lot out of himself. And I think those type of attributes are contagious in a locker room. And that's what I'm looking forward to. Like, I can't wait to see this team grow together and how they mature together, and expect great things out of the group. But I think Jack's confidence in himself will help lead our team that way.
Dawson Mercer has burst out onto the scene and just looks fantastic. Drafted 18th overall in 2020. What were your expectations going into the training camp with Dawson Mercer? And did you think you had, like, did you think Mercer had this in him this season? I'm sure you're going to say, like, we knew he had this in him eventually. Did you know you were going to get it this early?
No, I'd be lying to you if I said I saw, even if I said, no, I saw this down the road. No. We knew Dawson was going to be a thorough player. We knew he can contribute offensively. At what, you know, how much, we weren't sure. But we knew we were getting a 200-foot player. We knew we were getting a guy who takes pride in his own end. We knew we were getting a player who could play any three positions up front and contribute equally. I have to tell you, he went off to the rookie tournament in Buffalo, and he was lights out. Like, he was unbelievable. Okay, it's the rookie tournament. He played well. And then we started camp, and his play did not decrease at all. It just continued to get better and better. And then he started playing with NHL players, and then you saw the exhibition games. And again, it's exhibition, right? But he kept his game. He kept his foot on the pedal, to be quite honest, and he hasn't let up. With eight games under his belt, you know, you got two more before you're really committed to the player at that 10-game mark. I told him, I said, you can rest easy here, my friend. When we get back, we're out on the West Coast. When we get back to New Jersey, I want you to go look for plays because you're not going anywhere. What was that my plan? No. My plan was that this 19-year-old turning 20 would probably need quite some time in the American Hockey League. And, boy, this is a great problem to have.
It is. Do you find that...
centers like this.
Yeah, I know. Like, do you find sometimes that as a manager, as much as you want to be proactive and plan and control as much as you can, really when it comes down to it, all your plans are just plan B, and plan A is just go with whatever the team gives you and adjust accordingly?
Yeah, oh for sure. You know, like when you're looking at a Dawson Mercer and you're looking at, you know, a potential contract slide, and he's on his entry level for 4 years because he didn't hit that 10-game mark, and what that looks like cap-wise 2 years from now when we feel we're going to be continue to motor along and be becoming the team we think we're going to be, or 3 years from now, and you still have a player like this on entry level, wow, that's a luxury. Yeah, you think about that stuff. You have to. You have to plan ahead. But you know what? You can have all the plans you want, but when something like this is you're watching something like this just blossom underneath your nose, you just say, you know what? Scrap that. This kid, he's contributing now. He'll contribute next year, and if when he's out of this entry-level deal, so be it. We'll figure it out, but this is a good problem to have.
Sorry, we just had some technical difficulties there. Tom, you still there? Sorry about that, Tom.
Yeah.
Jeff was just having some technical difficulties there. I'll just finish up here, just a quick one. Mackenzie Blackwood, there was a lot regarding him in the offseason and his vaccination status, and that's been all cleared up. What have you made of his game thus far this season?
Oh, I think he's been as advertised. You know, we believe in McKenzie. We know, you know, where we think he can grow to. But like any young player, like there's I'm sure there are goals that he wants back. But there are times where he's kept us in games where we, like the Tampa Bay game, we fought back after being down 3-0, and he makes some great saves in the third period to keep it at 3-1 or 3-2 and allow us to continue to come back. So, you know what, like I can talk. So much about the kid. We think he's a very good goalie. He's kind of established himself right now. But like any player, like I know he wants to continue to get better and continue to develop, and that's my expectations for McKenzie.
60 seconds here with you, Tom. Has he talked about the Canadian Olympic team at all to you? Because I know that he was, you know, among many people's lists on, you know, this is a guy that maybe we should be looking to as one of the contenders to take one of the top two or three spots on that Canadian Olympic team. Has he talked to you about that at all?
No, I don't. We don't talk about those things. The only thing we've talked about when it came to Olympics was, you know, how Hockey Canada has strong interest in McKenzie to be one of their goalies, but you got to get vaccinated, my friend. you know, I think a call from Doug Armstrong to McKenzie was big for him. Realize, oh, this is real. This is real. So I've got to take the next steps to give myself a chance to be on the Olympic team, and hence he got vaccinated.
Well, Tom, sorry about the technical difficulties. Jeff actually lost power, but thanks a lot for taking some time for us today. We really appreciate it.
Awesome. Anytime. See you guys. Bye.
There he goes. That's Devils GM Tom Fitzgerald. And for those wondering, Jeff actually did lose power at his home, his lovely home in Stouffville. So Jeff will be back tomorrow, and maybe he might have to come over to my house because we got a generator over here. Many thanks to our guests earlier today, Elliot Friedman from HockeyNet in Canada and the 32 Thoughts podcast. We're also joined by ESPN's Arda O'Cal. Great conversation there between Jeff and Arda, as well as Helena St. James from the Detroit Free Press. And you just heard Tom Fitzgerald. For Jeff Merrick, for myself, Matt Marchese, and for technical operator Lance Kennedy, you've been listening to The Jeff Merrick Show. We'll talk to you tomorrow.